Welcome to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, coming to you from the Cargo District Recording Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we discuss the most fascinating topics of life. I'm Tyler Yaw with my co-host, Chris Kelly, and each week we interview a special guest to learn how they acquired their wisdom over a glass of whiskey. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and enjoy Whiskey and Wisdom.
Welcome back, everybody. This week, you have your constant co-hosts,
Tyler, y'all,
and myself, Chris Kellum. And this is a fun week for us because we have a double sponsorship.
Double giveaway.
There we go.
Yeah.
First, we partnered with Walton's Distillery up in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and they gave us a bottle of the E.M. Walton straight bourbon whiskey. It's single barrel, 90 proof. This is actually something different that we'll be tasting throughout the episode. They gave us a little swag bag. And then we reached out to the boys over at Uncommon Boutique. Yeah.
Correct.
I see their shirts say UB. So like my head was like unbroken. Crazy. We invited them on and they also decided to throw some swag at us, or at you guys technically.
Yeah, unfortunately not at us, but at all of our listeners, a $100 gift card for Uncommon Boutique. And you guys are right across the street from Target, right?
Correct.
That's right, yeah. So I know especially the listeners out there with wives and girlfriends, you're probably over there a lot anyway, so might as well go over and stop at Uncommon and not waste all your time in Target.
Oh, for sure. So we'll give you more details on how to win these things near the end or in the middle, just to throw people off. That way they don't just like stay to the middle.
Right, true.
Or fast forward. But yeah.
But yeah, let's introduce everyone here first and then we'll take our first sip. So right to the right of me, we have...
My name is Jack and I am co-owner of Uncommon Boutique.
My name is Troy Poland and I'm also a co-owner of Uncommon Boutique.
And last but not least...
This is Dalton and I'm also co-owner of Uncommon Boutique.
This is also the first time that we've had three guests on the podcast at once. Yeah, more the merrier.
Yeah.
But let's try this Walton's Distillery here. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
I didn't mean to do that. I inhaled when I drank it.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those, mind you, we did a Sunday morning episode, and we haven't really had too much to eat beforehand, so... Tyler's mental was not prepared for whiskey drinking just yet.
No, I was like, oh, I have to do the breathing technique that Angela taught us, and I inhaled it when I needed to drink it.
That's why I gave up on that. I'm like, my brain does not work well enough for me to be like, if I inhale, I'm going to swap.
Yeah, just like that. Work.
It's also 9 a.m.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Walton's is kind of nice. They're, like you said, they're based up in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and it is a family-owned company, Mr. Walton. Donald G. Walton Jr. owns a company and works with the people out there. I'm sure, I want to say he's a lawyer.
Yeah, so he's an attorney. The story is actually really funny with the Walton's Distillery up there. So originally, back in the days of moonshining and bootlegging and all of that, his extended family was, or may or may not have been, very involved in the moonshine business and bootlegging. And so his uncle, who the owner now, his uncle was actually a moonshiner.
Yep.
And when they started to do some more moonshine, he was getting older and everything. And of course, his nephew was an attorney and he was looking to sell it to someone. And he was like, hey, I mean, I'm an attorney. I can't be doing any legal moonshining as my side business here. He said, I'll be more than happy to take it over, but we have to do it the legal way. And so that's kind of how the actual business started. And they're up there in the kind of outskirts of Jacksonville. It's a really cool distillery because they try to keep it as close to the roots as possible. It's as close to the original
recipe
for all of their moonshines and their whiskey out there. And the guy who gave us the tour was hilarious, too. He said it's as close to the original as you can get, minus some of the raccoon pee, which obviously made it in there when you were doing it out in the middle of the woods with no regulation. So he goes, I'm sure that changed the taste a little bit, but it's still good nonetheless.
Yes. But talking about like family get together and building a brand, I mean, I feel like that's what you guys are doing. I mean, you're not technically blood related, but some of y'all are family now, right?
mean, we all live together now, so.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah, though. I mean, it was kind of determining where we wanted to open the shop up. I've lived here in Wilmington for 7 years, and I was like, you know, me and my wife live here, and yeah. So I was like, let's just open up a shop here. I was like, you know, Wilmington's an untapped market, and, yeah. You know, I have a bunch of friends that are into sneakers and streetwear, and the, you know, the community of Wilmington's very local friendly.
Yeah.
It's all about the, you know, people here love local businesses and small businesses. And my wife was generous to open up the house to,
yeah.
to my friends and say, yeah, they can live with us.
So which begs the question, where are you guys originally from then before moving into Wilmington?
So I'm originally from High Point, and like Dalton said, we just kind of moved on a yeah. whim. It all happened like so fast because originally we were thinking about opening a store next summer.
Oh, okay.
And we had done some extensive research. We had gone to Charleston looking at places. We had looked in Georgia, Atlanta, Savannah, and we kind of could just kept pushing it off. It was like, okay, we just need to find the right place to sign a lease. And then that's, you know, Dalton was like, let's just open up shop here in Wilmington.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that support local businesses, and the shoe market is pretty much untapped here, mm-hmm. and we've been seeing that just in the small amount of time that we've been open.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm also from High Point, and we knew that the Piedmont and even like the Charlotte area was overcrowded, oversaturated. Mm, okay. So the coastal North Carolinas was probably the only option, and I think it speaks a lot that we passed up on Charleston and places in Georgia to stay home and in Wilmington,
yeah.
and we're so thankful for the community support thus far, and we're happy to be here.
Yeah, and actually, so you're the one that got everyone else into the sneaker game, right?
I guess I was one of the originals, considering I started when Nike Elite socks were popular and people were matching with the shoes.
Yeah.
I was selling socks off of my twin bed and at home on eBay, and my dad even had to install a bigger mailbox just to ship out my holiday packages. But then I found myself spending too much money on shoes, and I thought, okay, well, let me get into Jordans. And I've worked with numerous stores across North Carolina as they've popped up in Greensboro, Winston, Charlotte, and I thought now's the time to take the leap and just do it ourselves and have fun with it. So
that's awesome. So you're the next one in line, right, to getting into sneakers and everything. So how did you get involved?
So I got involved in college. I've always been a fan of sneakers. I remember wanting Jordans growing up, but never really had the opportunity to.
Right.
And then working a couple jobs during college, I finally like saved up enough money. Freshman year, I worked on a farm for the entire summer, and I had just got enough money for the Yeezy Pirate Blacks that released by Kanye West. One of the first drops, and ended up getting a pair. So really from that day on, it kind of just spurred into this obsession of shoes, which has now led into a business. But I met Jack through a mutual friend of mine, because Jack was into shoes, and he was like, hey man, you know, you need to get in touch with this guy. He's getting, you know, multiple shoes per release. And I think he could definitely help out. And from pretty much that conversation, Jack and I have gone to multiple sneaker cons. We've consigned at multiple stores. And Jack's also introduced me to Dalton. And like, it ties everything together.
Yeah.
But even before then, we missed each other by a year at the same middle school. So I left sixth, and I think he joined in seventh. So we'd always been somewhere close, just never knew each other.
That's crazy. That's kind of the story for all of you guys, that just kind of always kind of missing paths and everything. And finally, sneakers is what brought you all together.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's really cool. So how'd you get in the sneaker game, Dalton?
So I kind of, like, honestly, Yeezy was the first shoe. Like, all my buddies that I worked with, they all had, like, the 350s. And
yeah.
I was always so, like, I always beat my shoes. And so it was like, I don't want to spend a lot of money on a shoe. And then I kind of got into the kind of the artistic aspect of it and the design aspect, and kind of could appreciate the shoe. And then when I graduated college and started a job, I was like, you know what, I'm going to invest in a nice pair. I got my first pair of 350s. Got another one. And I was like, all right, well, now I'm not wearing them. I was like, I was like, they're worth something. And so I found a group on Facebook and like, put them for sale on there. And I was like, man, I was like, I just bought these, wore them and sold them for more than I paid for them. I was like, this is a good way to make some money. Exactly. And then, you know, ever since then, we just start entering draws for shoes, and kept hitting. And then
I like the first like time I actually hit a really good shoe, I like texted Jack. I was like, hey, I just hit this because I knew Jack was into them.
Right.
And he's like, if you ever like need help getting more, he's like, let me know. And then it was spiraled. Me and my wife bought our house. I had an entire room full of shoes.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, finally now it's like I got to move all that out. And my wife's like, we got our house back, but then now people are living there.
Right.
But yeah, honestly, for me, it was kind of like Troy, like kind of the interest in shoes kind of navigated me into selling shoes because it was more of a hobby to afford what I wanted.
Right. So it's funny you bring that up too, because I was thinking the same thing when I was bringing you guys on too. So like I can appreciate the rarity and the artistic value of the shoes and the sneakers. I'm the same way though. Like if I buy a pair of sneakers, I'm beating the living hell out of them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can like invest in something like that. But hearing the way that you kind of got into it and stuff makes more sense to me. And then also where you guys have like the draws and everything to get the shoes, it makes me go back to my jewelry days like Chris is doing now with watches. Very similar, because a lot of people come in and they say the same thing about Rolexes and stuff that we have. It's like, oh, I could never buy a watch that expensive. I beat the hell out of it. I'm going to lose it and all that stuff. So it's a very common bond between both of the collectors. And we actually follow a guy in New Jersey who's a massive watch collector and a massive sneaker collector. So it's really cool combo that he has. And every time there's a new drop of something, he's connected to multiple like boutiques and resellers and stuff up there, and he's getting the first of everything. So it was interesting kind of bringing the two together and then having the opportunity to bring you guys on to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big thing for a lot of people, because y'all understand if you're into like jewelry and Rolexes and like watches, is it's beyond just an item to, as some people just see it's just another pair of shoes or just another watch. But yeah, if you can really appreciate like the work and craftsmanship that went into the item, you understand where its value comes from and why other people want it so much. And they're truly investments, because I mean, there's some Rolexes, you know, they were only 15,000, you know, brand new, but now they're going for like 100 grand, and you're like, you know, it doesn't make sense, but it's really an avenue of investment too. Some people just buy these items to hold on to them for down the road, you know, now they tripled their money. And so yeah.
So for each one of you guys, do you wear the sneakers that you get, or are they like purely investment?
So I've fallen victim to both of these. I've bought shoes as investments, and obviously you win some, you lose some, but I'd say right now I beat them.
Yeah.
Just because everything that we've kind of invested to the store, it's like, you know, we need to put that as our main focus right now. But
right.
You know, there's certain shoes and certain shops that kind of have, you know, they follow this business model. It's like, you know, we're going to buy 100, 200, 250 pairs of shoes and just sit on them. And seeing trends in the sneaker market, you know, there's certain silhouettes of Jordans, like Jordan 1s, Jordan 4s, Jordan 11s. They appreciate over time, just like watches. And to take it a step further, there's certain consignment shops that are starting to dip their toe into the watch game. You know, if a customer comes in and they really want a Rolex or an AP or something else, they'll go and source it for them. So to sum it up, like the sneaker market is not just sneakers anymore. It's starting to expand into collectibles that range from watches, jewelry, clothing, even bear bricks that people are designing their house with, skate decks that you can, you know, design a room, build benches with.
Wow.
It's pretty interesting.
That's very neat. Is that something you guys plan on expanding into?
I would love to, but we don't have the expertise right now. So I need to brush up on some of my Rolex, to try to figure out, you know, what's a fake versus a real one. But
that's not to say
we won't do it in the future.
And like the skate decks and everything too, is that something you guys are interested in? Because I didn't even know about that. That's interesting.
So we have some. Like,
okay.
Supreme kind of, you know, is
true.
A New York street brand.
Yep.
And so they always are dropping like a new skate deck. And so like Jack actually got the Burberry decks.
Oh,
and
wow.
So like a skate deck, it was a collaboration with Burberry.
Yeah.
And I mean, retail was like $80, but like now it's like a $250 skate deck. And jeez, to some people, they're like, why would you spend a $250 on a skate deck? But it's Burberry. It's a designer brand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we have them in the store and we sell them, but they're honestly, we kind of use them as aesthetic pieces.
Right.
And there's some collectibles that we use also for just aesthetics. But, you know,
had a kid come in the other day, and like Cactus Plant Flea Market did a McDonald's collaboration, and I had a little plastic figurine, and the kid was like, I want it. And I was like, all right, I just gave it to him, you know, because to me, like, it was just a design piece. To him, it was something that he really wanted to collect, and to it meant more to him than it did me. It was just something cool to look at. So,
yeah, that's great.
As far as like the aesthetics go, I mean, part of our business model is just being unique and uncommon. And so we sought out a machine shop that basically custom built a frame where we could mount skateboard decks to the frame. And to some degree, it's customizable and interchangeable. But right now we have the Supreme Uncut deck just laying there as a way of people to sit down and, you know, try on shoes.
Oh, wow.
So it's a unique piece that a lot of people haven't seen before. And we just went the extra mile to use that product that Supreme made as a piece of art.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, I saw some of your decks on social media, and I was like, oh, I didn't know they're flipping those. So, because I look through, and I'm always asking questions about sneakers and everything. What is, because all of you guys, I'm sure, have different favorite pieces. I will have to ask, what is your favorite wearable shoe, and what's your favorite collectible shoe? Because those are two very different things. Had to stop.
I was going to say, let Jack go. Cause...
I have one clarifying question.
Yeah.
Does it have to be in our collection, or is it like a dream shoe?
Oh, whatever.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start. I guess a dream shoe would be the Red October, the Yeezy Red October. But within my collection, it would have to be the Cactus Plant Swarovski Nike. I'm drawing a blank. The Nike Dunks, the crystal Dunks. I call them the Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, they're literally a Nike Dunk bejeweled with Swarovski crystals.
That's
and
crazy.
So, yeah, and so we called them Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, I've even got the matching hoodie, and I'm waiting for my Hot Boy Summer to come out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
As far as wearable shoes, I would go with my off-white Presto is a part of the original 10 collaboration. Yeah. So shout That's out cool. and rest in peace, Virgil.
Yeah, I'll probably follow suit with another off-white Virgil shoe, which would be the off-white Chicago 1. I've had a couple pairs of those. One I have worn, and it's just such an iconic shoe because it was the first Nike collaboration shoe that Virgil did. And, you know, he's come out to probably over 100 shoes now with the partnership. But best wearable shoe, I would probably say either the ones I'm wearing now, the Nike 87 Element Dunks that I wear every day because they have a cork insole and they're extremely comfortable. Or another pair that I wear quite often is the Nike Air Max Paras, which has got a USA design on it. So it also kind of... a little bit of flash, and when people see it, it's like, oh, you know, that's really unique. I've never seen Nike do that. So, and it's really hard to find now. So
it's good marketing too.
It is really good. It is really good marketing on behalf of Nike, but that also reminded me I should probably start looking for another one because they're starting to brown a little bit.
So like, I don't have a ton of sneakers in my collection just because I sold most of them, but that was to kind of help fund my portion. But right now, probably my favorite shoe that I have in my collection is probably the Paddle Wave Air Max 1s.
Okay, yeah.
Air Maxes are kind of a classic silhouette. It's a little less of a hype shoe, mm-hmm. and so like not everybody gravitates to that, but it's comfortable, it's classic, it goes with everything, and that Pada collection that they did was really nice. And then for Dream Shoe, we actually have one in the store. I don't know if I'll ever be able to bring myself into buying a pair, but is the Chunky Donkey Nike Dunks. When those came out, like, I was like, man, I really want those. Yeah. And like, they're far-fetched, like, design, because it just looks like a Ben and Jerry's, like,
right.
ice cream. But it's just such a, like, a iconic shoe, especially the friends and family pack that it came in. It came in an ice cream tub.
Oh, no way. Yeah. That's crazy.
But yeah, it's just a great dunk, and it kind of made the dunk wave, like, explode. Wow. Them and Travis Scott when they hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always laugh because we follow a guy on YouTube, and he is one who's like, I think these shoes are really nice. I'm going to buy them, and then I'm going to wear them. So he has some off-white Converses that he wears, and he deadlifts in and squats in them. And the moment he did that, everyone, like, blew his shit up. I was like, I mean, if you got the money, why not wear them?
Hey, wear them and appreciate them.
Right, yeah. Get the value out of it.
I would also just put those to the side if I had that much money.
You guys just opened a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the goal for ending out this year and going into next year? Anything that you're hoping to accomplish?
Right now, fighting with Google to try to get us on Google Maps.
Oh, really?
I've been fighting with them for like a month, trying to just get them to verify our location.
That's crazy.
But yeah, for me, I think my goal personally for the store would be kind of just continuing to reach out into the community.
Right.
Like, we've already started partnering up with some local news station doing like a 12 days of Christmas giveaway. Nice. And then, you know, we've met some really cool people in the community that I didn't even know existed around here that have some really far reaches. But I think my goal is just to for people to know about us and see that we're going to be community oriented.
Yeah, certainly. So, have you guys walked around the cargo district at all? There's a few vintage streetwear shops around.
Yeah, I have. I come down here pretty often.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we'll go to Alcove and and then what's the Starling?
Starling. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a regular spot for us.
Yeah.
That's so sad. They know our names.
Yeah,
that's not a bad thing.
I mean, it isn't.
We also have a place in the cargo district, so.
Yeah, true.
Support your friends.
Exactly.
I do. It was bad. It was my birthday the other day. And two groups of friends had never met each other showed up, and they're like, hey, they were chit chatting, and they're like, hey, you know, I think Chris wants a drink. I don't know what he gets. And the bartender was like, old fashioned. Chris, does it matter which one you want? Like, is there a whiskey or a bourbon? And they're like, no, he just gets a different one every time. Yep. I'm like, yeah, that's me. Cause we drink so much whiskey. I don't want to sit on the same thing until I've tried multiple pieces. I feel like I'd be the same way with shoes. Like, I don't want to settle on just wearing this pair if I had the funds to just buy multiples.
I think I was going to say, I think that's a problem for a lot of people. It's like Pokemon. You got to collect them all.
Exactly. And we were talking about goals too. It looked like there was something that you wanted to put in there, Jack.
Well, I'm more of the business side. I'm the back end bookwork. Yeah. It's a balance, but I think being community involved, but also achieving profitability.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Is that something that looks like is possible within the first year?
It's possible, but it's going to take a little footwork. And Dalton's our front end guy, and he's car salesman too, ex-car salesman. So yeah. I believe in him.
That's awesome. Usually when you start a business, being profitable first year is almost unheard of. So having that ability out there, and it's an attainable goal is amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. How about yourself?
I would like to echo what Dalton says of being community focused, but I think another thing is also trying to maximize sales within the first year, just because, like you said, being profitable is very difficult.
Right.
So I think finishing out the year with just, you know, good sales and allowing people to come in and shop and really have that experience. And that just kind of goes back to the name Uncommon. And that's why we chose it, because we looked around, not just in the state of North Carolina, but just up and down the East Coast and looking at store designs, and we found a similar pattern of, you know, white shelves, black wall, counter in the back.
Right.
But the approach we took, thanks to, you know, Jack and his family, Dalton and his family, is a more organic type of feel. You know, we have wooden shelves. You walk in, it looks clean, it feels fresh. And then also our prices reflect that too on the shoes. Too often do we see unrealistic markups on Yeezys and Jordans, mm-hmm. and people get sticker shock, and they're just like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't pay $500 or $600 for this shoe when, you know, they can find it elsewhere about half the price. So I think combining the look and feel as well as prices and sales is just my overall goal for finishing out this year.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because that was something that I didn't realize as well, and was a good surprise for me when I was checking out your website and everything too, and the Instagram post. I've always thought the same thing. It was like, oh, if I want a pair of these Yeezys, I'm going to have to spend like $500 for this. Mm-hmm. And I started looking at your stuff. I'm like, oh, this is attainable. Like, I can actually afford these shoes.
Yeah, and that was kind of the goal, like Troy said. Being that we used to all supply other stores, we, like, one of the things that we realized is like, all right, so without having, like, if we're supplying our own store and not supplying others, we can kind of cut out that middleman, which we can lower our costs, still obtain the, you know, profitable goals that we want to hit, but provide the product to the consumers at a more attainable price point.
Right.
And we've really seen that resonate through people who have walked in the door, and it's, you know, you got your young people and then you're what we call the old heads, the guys that have been into sneakers for 20, 30 years. Even they come in and they're like, this is a good price.
Wow,
you know, yeah. And so we're hearing that with a lot of people is that they appreciate what we're doing. They're very receptive to our pricing and everyone's really been pleased with the experience that they've had with us. So
I think that goes a long way too with the building community that you want to do as well. So being able to come in, especially with these guys that have been doing it for so many years, to really impress them with your price points and build that community that way through your trust. Yep. I think that's huge for you guys. There's going to be good success. I can see it.
I love that. So when you say you guys want to be community focused, everyone means different things when they say, I've been in marketing and public relations for a little bit. So I know when people say things, they mean different things half the time. What do you guys mean by trying to be more community focused?
I think for me, it's making sure that we're involved with the youth leagues. So whether it's basketball, baseball, even we had a semi-professional basketball coach come in the other day, sponsor a team like that, or the typical shoe store will do like a canned food drive. So making sure we do the normal things, but then go above and beyond and make sure that we're also supporting our target demographic. So That's what community involvement is for me.
Yeah, I would probably say the same thing. I have a little bit of a soft heart for the youth leagues because I used to coach a travel baseball team for about 5 to 6 years. So that was one of the, I guess, the biggest focus for me. But I think even, I guess, taking a step further, consignment shops like this in the past have not really been as community focused. Like you sell high-end shoes and apparel. It kind of just seems like this upper echelon of things and people, you know, they have different perceptions when they walk in. And going back to the price points, like we want to be fair and getting out in the community, whether that's supporting youth baseball teams, doing canned food drives, doing Toys for Tots, 12 Days of Christmas on the news station, just interacting with people and making yourself visible, I think is one of the biggest things to me.
Yeah, I like everything they've said, like to me too. But I guess for me, it's a little different too because I've lived here 7 years, and right. So like I've kind of, I mean, in Wilmington, 7 years is a good bit. Like you might as well almost be a local,
exactly.
But also because a lot of times, like they said, the other stores they'll do things, but they don't really, I guess, they kind of collaborate with other people or like try to make it a community beyond just what they do. And so, like, when y'all reached out to us, I was like, yeah, let's do it. I was like, this is awesome. I was like, because I want to be able to also work with people that other business owners in the community, because, like, small businesses, it's not the easiest thing in the, you know, to be successful with. And so also collaborating with other small businesses and reaching out and, like, you know, and making sure that the community of just beyond the people that we are target demographic, but Wilmington as a whole realizes that it's a place they can come and even just like say what's up, hang out for a little bit, or, you know, and trust that what we're providing them is a real product and we're offering them at a fair, you know, fair price. So, yeah, it's beyond just like, to me, being a part of, like, sponsoring the community, but actually being in the community.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And I know you talked about, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, kind of just going back to what you mentioned, it's like they say one thing but do another. It's actually just being true to our word and, you know, following through with what we're going to do. And I think we, you know, we've already started to do that just with just some of the small pieces that we're doing right now. And that's not to say, you know, we can do bigger things in the future, but yeah, it's, I'm excited. I'm fairly new to the Wilmington community. It's only been 2.5 months. So yeah, just expanding our reach and just interacting as much as possible.
There used to be a local company, kind of going back to what you said too, that when they started, they had quite a bit of financing behind them and chose not to go the community route, and it didn't go well. So go well for them for the most part. So I think it's really smart to kind of start local, especially in Wilmington, because it is such a local, small community. One of my things I said since the second year I lived here is Wilmington's the largest small town that I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. It's just crazy.
I think Wilmington itself is just an amalgamation of so many different parts of the East Coast. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are tired of New York and the busyness of up there. So they're like, let's move down here because we don't want to go to Florida and deal with those hurricanes. And then vice versa, all the old people who used to live in Florida moved this way because they don't want to go back to the cold. And it just brings a lot of families here and a lot of like newcomers. And being involved in the community, I think will definitely grow your presence. And I think a lot of people appreciate that.
You guys are talking about your target demographic as well, too. So when you're writing out the business plan, who's your ideal customer? So if you could put into like a box one person that would walk in through your doors that was the perfect person for you, who would it be?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you for our sponsor, the Leland Brewing Company, right over the bridge in Leland Township. Definitely check them out. It's a nice local spot with local beers that they're making on site, as well as some that aren't from the area. It is an amazing family-friendly location, and it's really nice. They got some greenery out back, as well as some nice food trucks that pop up every now and then. So give them a check out. Tell them that Whiskey and Wisdom sent you.
The perfect person, I think Wilmington has been interesting. We've seen every demographic, but for the most part, when you think of a shoe store, you think of middle-aged to younger people of any race, any sexuality, and it's making an artistic decision when dressing yourself. So it's from the shoes to the clothing. You know, if it's a hat, sunglasses, it's really whatever. But we have seen a lot of the older sneakerheads come through the door, and that's kind of surprised me. But to say there's one exact person we're targeting is hard. It's really a lot of people.
But yeah, and I think that's because with sneakers, it's every, I guess, age group has a different style. Okay. And so, like, some of your older sneakerheads are into like your fives, your sixes, your 13s, your 12s. And then the younger demographic is into like Nike Dunks. And then you have the people who are all about Yeezy. And then, so it kind of reaches a whole spectrum of people. And, you know, some people that are very influenced by influencers, you'll see that gravitate into what is technically what they consider in style right now. And so it comes in waves. And so honestly, just targeting like what is the fad right now.
Right.
And then also like we offer beyond sneakers, like streetwear. Some people don't really care about like having really nice sneakers, but they want to dress, you know, either comfy, like essentials. Right. It's a designer brand through Fear of God, and it's just like blanks and like nude colors, like browns, you know, blacks, grays, whites, beiges. And so that's a, you know, a whole different demographic. Some people, that's all they care about. And then you have the vintage market, which we haven't really tapped into that yet. It's kind of a thought that we want to do, but we don't really know anything about the vintage too much.
Yeah.
So we're wanting to reach out to some vintage market guys and kind of pick their brains.
Oh, cool.
So my question, because it's a collaboration of all three of you guys, and because I know where I am at in the retail space, who has, like, who picks out what shoes in that you guys bring into the fold? Like, is it a, oh, hey, I saw this online, I think this might be good. Are you ahead of the trends? Because I feel like that's the hard thing. Like, which one of you guys is like, oh yeah, we need to go for this swing, or we should, I think that would be a good one, or that's a horrible shoe it's going to look like.
For people not watching, everyone looked over at Jack and they're like, here's the microphone. Yeah, so
that's, it's, we, I'd like to think we curate a specific shoe selection, but really the way our inventory sourcing process, it's what we can get our hands on, because the demand of these things is insane. And just this week, we've sold a shoe that we didn't think would sell well, and we sold out and even special ordered that shoe for somebody. Wow. So it's really a matter of what we can get our hands on at an affordable price that we can also then share those savings on to other, you know, our customers. But then also making sure that our selection is diverse enough that we have interest and people do come back, and there's always something new on the wall that they haven't seen before. Mm. So just as a little example, like the off-whites, whenever there's an off-white that drops, the demand is so absurd, it's hard to get a full-size run of that shoe, mm-hmm. whereas if it's your generic Dunk that releases on Nike or Panda Dunks that they've released about seven times, we might have a full-size run of that, but it's also priced accordingly so mm-hmm. that, you know, if it is a generic shoe, it's priced at a generic price that anybody can feel comfortable paying and wearing it, whereas an off-white, you might think, that's $600-$700 shoe, I don't know if I want to wear that. But we do put a little bit of attention into what we buy, particularly clothing, because there's a little more time to process whether that's something somebody would wear and it goes with this shoe that recently released. Whereas with shoes, it's about speed. You have to acquire these things. If it's available, there's not much thought you can put into it or you'll miss out.
So with sourcing, do you have to build relationships with other retailers in order to get the shoes that you want?
I'm sorry, I have to steal the mic back on this one. I would say that since I've been doing it for 13 years, I've kind of found unique ways to acquire inventory. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are intimidated, but I have software programs that run on computers. I've got three computers that run 24/7 that are built and set up to automate the purchasing process.
Oh, wow.
So I don't have to really hopefully touch the mouse. That's the goal. Yeah. I have two jobs right now, so making sure that I'm hands-off with setup, but also so that it's operating so that it does actually acquire shoes. It's a finicky walk where you have to, you know, people don't like talking about bots, but also it's a way of getting your hands on these things. Mm-hmm. If you do try and manual a shoe, it's just about impossible.
Wow.
And if you do have software programs that do it for you, it does make it easier. Discussing fairness is a whole other story, but we do it, I think, for a good reason. It's not like we're out here charging way over market for a shoe. We're trying to make sure it gets into the true collector's hands at an affordable price. And over the years, these software programs have taken numerous iterations and more advanced, and with more advanced, you have to pay more. So, I mean, it's mm-hmm. something that we've kind of paid our dues in to make sure that we're using good programs. And
it's still an investment on that side, too.
Oh, so, yeah.
I think people think, like, I know some people, because I get in the bot game, too, just because the world that I'm in, I have to know about it. But I think people think when they think bots, it's like, oh, someone just put this, like, software in their computer, and they're just buying up all of these, like, shoes or watches or whatever the case may be. And I was like, no, there's a lot of work that goes into those things and a lot of engineering behind it.
It's not just even the coding, but setting up the program to mm-hmm. start at this certain time with this certain keyword. And, I mean, I've messed up keywords before, and I accidentally got shoes I didn't want.
Oh, no.
Or I got 30 pair of a shoe I didn't want. And it's,
I didn't even think about that.
You have to go with the punches. So sometimes you take an L, and you just have to roll with the punches, sell it, and move on. Yeah. And it's not easy, and it takes time and experience to figure out what keywords you need to use. And just the other day when the Jordan 1 taxis released, I had a very generic keyword in, and I checked out some J Balvin slides. So it happens.
So for Jack and Troy, when you guys found out that you guys were coming down to Wilmington, how big of a sell was that to get you guys to come down here?
It was actually a lot, because I was really hesitant on first, just because of how saturated the market is in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I really wanted to go further south to start in a city that was a little bit bigger, just to kind of get that reach.
Mm-hmm.
But then we kind of just started looking at everything, living expenses and cost, and Wilmington just made the most sense. And, you know, we're obviously extremely gracious for Dalton and his wife opening up their house to us. But like I said earlier, it really happened extremely quickly, because, you know, we were looking at a space on Princess Street, and it didn't really fit what exactly we were looking for. And then the space beside Augustino's opened up on New Center, and we just all collectively looked at it and said, you know, if we never take this leap, we're never ever going to do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we thought we were probably going to have to start looking again at the start of the year. And I'd say that changed pretty rapidly in 2 weeks. We ended up talking to our landlord, signed the lease, and I think within the next couple of days, I just packed up two suitcases and moved into Dalton's house.
Oh, so wow.
There's still every now and then where I'll have to go back and drive 3 hours to go get some more things just to make my life a little bit easier. But it's one of those sacrifices that you have to make. So I've enjoyed it so far. It's part of the fun, you know, just taking a chance on it and, you know, just seeing what turns out.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jack? How big of a sale was it get you down here?
It was a pretty big sale. I was like Troy, where I really wanted to be in a different market. I knew North Carolina was too saturated. Charleston or Mount Pleasant would have been the dream spot, but the cost of living down there was just absurd. And the way the market prices were, the rent cost and all that, it just didn't make sense. And I think after we had realized it was that expensive, just put this on the back burner till next year. Let's see what recession we might have and get through that and start while the economy's weak instead of going through the weakness. Wilmington kind of contradicted the whole thought of going to Charleston, and the numbers were starting to make sense as I was kind of modeling out the finances and the low cost of living, just because of how gracious Dalton and Macy were to open their house up to us for a couple months to get this going. And at some point Troy and I might move out, but I think we're enjoying it.
They're moving out.
Dalton's like, I may not be married if you don't move out. So.
But it was a lot easier once I saw the numbers. I'm a numbers guy. I'm an accountant by day. I'm kind of shoes by night. So I was working through taxes, and I didn't really want to think about opening a store. And I got through the 415 deadline, and over the summer, I think Dalton's I don't give a shit attitude, let's just do it, it rubbed off on me. And I was like, you know what, let's just full send it.
Yeah.
And I said, I need to get through the 9/15 deadline, which is the extension time for the tax returns I work on, and we'll see what it holds. And I think in early September, we were starting discussing a lease, and it wasn't too bad having discussions, but then signing late September, early October, I mean, we hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And Wilmington, it was like we were committed at that point. We talked to numerous landlords, numerous agents for leases, and we did this all ourselves. Like, we worked through it and just hit the ground running and did all the renovating ourselves and got open within a month and a half, which I'm pretty proud of. So
that was while all working, like, full-time jobs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I guess, like, going back to, like, what, like, the sell on Wilmington, but for me, like, living here, like, the hardest sell for me was leaving my job. Because, like, we were all like, who's going to quit their job and run the store full time? And like, me, I've been at Toyota for 4 years, and like, all right. And, like, in car sales, that's a very long time. Yeah. Like, I was, like, the fifth longest tenured salesperson there. And then I was like, you know what? This is what I want to do. This is my dream. I was like, y'all have, like, jobs where it's, like, steady. I was like, I'll quit. I'll run the store. They can help out in the back. And then my wife was like, you know what, if you're going to do it, do it. Like, and so having her support was kind of, selling her on it was a sell in its own, but she was very supportive. And then, like Jack said, we knocked out the store in 6 weeks, and we were like, our goal is to open up before, you know, holiday shopping. And we did it. It took a lot of efforts from family and friends, but we made it happen.
Yeah. Your build out went really quick. Cause I saw, like, the day that you got the keys on Instagram, and then I was like, dang, they're making some progress. And then open even before Black Friday, I was like, shoot.
Yeah, I need to, quick. I have some, like, transformation photos that I was going to do, like, a video or reel for.
Oh, yeah.
And just kind of show, like, how it progressed. But we put a lot of time and effort into it.
We were burning the midnight oil before a grand opening.
Oh, I believe that.
it was very interesting. It was fun. We didn't really get a whole lot of sleep, but our wrapping machine broke on the shoe wrap, so it overheated, and we actually had to go get a new fuse. So we were wrapping shoes with a flat iron.
Oh no!
And so, like, over the past 2 weeks, we've had to take shoes down, redo them, relabel, reprocess, just so, you know, we want the appearance to look good when people turn over a shoe. They look at the barcode. they scan it and there's not just this massive line from a flat iron sealing it together. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I think that just goes back to like the organic feel and the atmosphere that we're trying to provide.
Yeah. That's neat.
So I guess in my head, I've just like you, when you mentioned you were fighting Google, and Tyler was like, oh yeah, they're across from Target. And I'm like, where across from Target? But you guys said you're next to Augustino's.
Augustino's. So there's, so you have the strip right there. Like when you're going into Target on New Center, right before you turn into the Target entrance on the left, there's Augustino's, Catawba Brewery. Like there's a Japanese restaurant, Mizuki.
Yeah.
It's in that strip right there. And then behind it's like Aussie Island Surf Shop. Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
That'd be awesome. In my head, I thought you were the strip up.
Like from Target?
Yes. Yeah. I thought you were next to like Plato's. That's okay. What my brain was thinking.
Yeah, no. So it's the one after Plato's, like when you're coming, going towards Target.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coming from Hooters.
Yes.
That's what you need to eat. Yeah. Get some wings, some beer, and you go buy some shoes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Make sure you get that liquor in you. Buy two pair.
There you go.
What was one of the biggest obstacles that you guys faced when opening the retail location?
I'd say it goes back into finding the right location. So the finances is where my head goes first. And then secondly, I would say making sure that we had enough product to put out that was diverse enough that we felt like we could open a store that was going to draw some attention. And the you can ask them, the finances is what really sent me up a wall. I was running different iterations. I was running high, low, best case, worst case, you name it. But I know I can acquire inventory. That's not the problem. It's making sure that all the numbers make sense on the back end. And I think also I have a very demanding job. So I'm working 65 hours billable during like our busy season.
Oh, wow.
Balancing that and making sure the store is getting the attention it needs. And I know both Troy and Dalton had demanding jobs, making sure we put the due diligence in and we weren't jumping the gun on any opportunity and making sure the market wasn't about to tank on us and we were getting in over our heads, because there were some landlords that wanted north of $500,000 in financial guarantees. And that's just not practical for 25, 26 year olds wanting to start a business. So those were pretty much shut down immediately. And that's also what also made Wilmington make sense. So I'll let
Troy. I think the biggest concern for me was location. I think consignment shops like this traditionally like to place themselves in malls just because of the natural foot traffic. So that was one of my biggest concerns, is like, okay, if we go outside of Independence Mall, if we go outside of Princess Street, you know, the downtown area, how much traffic are we really going to get? Because Shoes relies on that, just, you know, stopping in, just looking around and being like, oh, you know, I can remember this next time I go into a shopping district, a mall, and things like that. So then, you know, we started to finally get over that hump with people coming into Augustino's, and they're, you know, you should see some of the looks that we get, and they just stop like dead in their tracks and just like just looking all around. You know, I didn't know a shoe shop was here. This used to be, you know, a different type of boutique. And I think the second thing outside of location was just the timing of it all, because, you know, like Jack had mentioned earlier, there's been talks of recession, whether we're currently in one or there's one coming. You know, I'll let other people decide for that. But the sneaker market really is in an interesting place, because a lot of people started reselling shoes with COVID. And once that money started to run out, I think we're starting to see a pretty significant shift in shoes and the overall demand for them too. The demand still is extremely high, but prices are falling all across the board. So those are probably my two biggest concerns, but I think Dalton's attitude, again, is just, you know, I don't give a shit. Let's just go ahead and do it.
Right.
That's pretty much been the motto since day one. And that's kind of just what I tell myself every day. It's like, you know, you can't really be worried about that stuff too much, even though it's always going to be in the back of your mind.
I really appreciate the go for it attitude, because one of the things that I get stuck behind a lot, because I'm very similar to you, I'm numbers based. I'm a financial advisor by day. So I completely understand. And so a lot of people start to get that paralysis by analysis. So without that person to be like, hey, we've done this enough, let's just fucking do it. Like, you need that behind you. So I appreciate that.
Ironically, I would actually say like being in sales, like knowing like the car market, like I've been in the, like I said, I was in car business for 4 years.
Right. Yeah.
I started as soon as I graduated college in 2018, and I kind of saw the, like, as soon as COVID happened, like every market exploded. Like they said, sneakers, sports cards, any collectible cars, like, you know, everything kind of flipped on its head. Things that shouldn't be appreciating are now being, are appreciating. And I think we kind of like, we know we kind of missed that like boom.
Yeah.
But one thing that happened, I think, within the sneaker market was it brought attention to it. Like more people are now into shoes and streetwear than ever before. Like, I think that I read an article, you know, the sneaker market, I think they said by 2030 is supposed to be like a $10 billion market, like an industry.
Yeah.
And you think shoes have been around for forever, you know? And so it's a continuously growing market. But I think my wife was the one that really was like pushing me. Cause I was like, man, I was like, cause it originally started, it was like, let's just do it. Let's go do it. And then the whole scare of like, if there's a recession and them two being more like analytical guys or like, well, maybe we need to wait. And then me and my wife would talk. I said, man, I really want to just do this. I was like, I want to leave my job. I was like, I know that sounds crazy because I really enjoyed my job.
Mm-hmm.
Like I enjoyed the people I like worked with. But after 4 years, I was like, I'm kind of just getting stagnant here. And, you know, and I've always wanted to own my own business. And then my wife was like, you know what? I think y'all just need to do it. Like, if y'all don't do it, you're always going to find a reason not to do it. And so she was pushing me, which egged me to push them. And then I was like, guys, let's just do it. I was like, this is what we need to do. I was like, it's a short term like lease in the grand scheme of things. Cause you know, on top of like a lot of places asking for a lot of money, but like they were wanting us to sign 5-6 year leases. And we're like,
oh yeah,
we're starting out. Like we don't know how fast we're going to grow. If we, if we sign this and we're outgrowing it, then we want to be able to like progress to the growth. But I mean, I think honestly my wife motivated me more to motivate them. And so it was kind of nice to really have that support. And I think that's something that's different that a lot of people don't see is because like she really wanted me to do it because she knew I wanted to do it.
That's really neat. Yeah. It's good to have that support behind you too, because I know a lot of people that their wives have been like, you want to leave a stable job to do what?
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And we are starting to come up on time. So we do have one last question for each one of you. If you were to tell your younger self one thing, what would it be? It's going around to you sooner or later. Go ahead, Troy.
One thing I'd tell my younger self, that's a really good question. I would probably just tell myself to just go for it. I think too many times I've doubted myself and abilities. And I think most recently over the last 2 years, I've kind of started to shake that habit. So, you know, as a teenager and probably as a young kid, just, you know, pretty much don't care what other people think. I know that's a very cliche answer, but I've started to actually see that unfold as owning a business because you're going to have people walk in. They're going to try to, you know, tell you, why did you do this? Why are your hours like this? Why did you display it this way? And you just got to, you know, remain headstrong and just do it your way and just go for it just because you only have so many chances in life. And I feel like this is a very big one for all of us. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably what I would tell my younger self.
That's awesome. I like it.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet, and I think Dalton and Troy would agree with this one, but I would tell myself to live a little. I've been a workaholic my whole life, and I think getting here to this point kind of shows it, and I think if I could go back and do it again, live a little bit more, enjoy the fun things in life, and don't take everything so serious. So I can still work on that now. It's never too late, but that's what I'd tell my younger self.
I'm with you completely. I was the same way too. There were so many opportunities I gave up because I was like, oh, nope, need to get more hours in here. Need to get more hours in there. Got to make those more greenbacks.
So I guess lastly for me, like growing up, I think we always, as kids, you always have a dream. It's like, oh, like I played sports. Oh, I want to be a baseball player. Oh, I want to be an astronaut. And then I think as you get older, you kind of get that mentality of, I just need to find a job that will pay the bills and I can, you know, do what I need to do and feel stable. But I think this opportunity has really showed me that, like, find what you want to do, like, find your why, like, what motivates you.
and just hit it headstrong. Just do what you want to do and follow your dreams, because the only person going to really hold you back is yourself.
Yeah, it's completely true. Nice. Have you read the books by Simon Sinek? Mm-mm. So it's either Your Why or Find Your Why, something like that. But it's very similar to what you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good.
So, because we're at the end, do you want to tell us what you're giving away?
Okay, sure. So we are giving away a $100 gift card, store credit, to our store. And I think it's another just way of getting involved and showing our appreciation to y'all for having us on and your listeners. And we hope that anybody that's listening comes into the store, enjoys the environment. And even if you aren't winning, we hope that you find a good deal in the store and walk out a happy customer.
They asked if they could bring us anything, and I asked for Yeezys and Jordans, but they said no on that, but they give us a $100 giveaway. So I was like, all right, I'll take that.
Episode two.
Right.
Love it. And so I guess, like, to collaborate with it, we'll organize something for, like, Instagram for followers to go and like and share together, and then we'll do a raffle, and we'll coordinate that together.
Perfect.
And make that happen. And it can be someone in Wilmington or it can be outside. You know,
awesome. Okay.
So we'll be able to, we'll either mail the gift card or we can give them the code that they can use online. Because we ship, you know, nationwide.
Oh, that's great.
Awesome.
Get your Christmas shopping done early.
Hey, yes. Exactly. If I won that, it would be Christmas shopping for myself. Thank you all so much for coming on. And what are some of your plugs that you want to give yourself that they can follow you on Instagram or anything like that?
So our store's Instagram is at Uncommon Boutique NC. If you want to follow me, the store only follows three people. It's us three. Okay. So, yeah. Awesome. We did that just to keep it kind of clean. So. Yeah.
But smart.
I love it. So we'll plug that in the show notes.
Yeah.
And because this is a community episode, we're giving away, on top of the $100 gift card, someone else will also win a goodie pack from Walton's Distillery. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a bottle of the E.M. Walton's, like their straight bourbon whiskey, plus their swag bag, which has like some keychains, stickers, magnets, and some just cool information about the company. Like I said, they're just a really interesting place to visit and check out. I know Southeast North Carolina doesn't really have any whiskey distilleries, similar to we don't have a ton of shoe boutiques. So we thought this was a great way to get you guys some holiday gifts and presents leading into Christmas.
And definitely go up to Walton's too and do their distillery tour. It's actually free for anyone that goes up there. They do them about every half hour or so. Mm-hmm. Very informative. You learn a lot about whiskeys and moonshine and how it all started in North Carolina here. And also their whiskey is just really good too, because North Carolina is not really known for their whiskey and it's starting to step up their game, and they've been around for quite a while. So they're eventually going to start getting into those older aged whiskeys as well too. So their bourbon will probably be around 6 years coming up soon. They have some barrels that are aging in there. So yeah, that some of those are the ones I'm looking forward to as well, but this one's a good one.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you guys for listening. You know, just follow us on social media. Leave a nice review or like on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, yeah. All of them. We're pretty much everywhere. Come find us.
Well, yeah. Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.